going to show yesterday, actually, for the tutorial that you did Monday. And so this is just the result from summing Euler's series. Now, of course, you can't see it. Okay, then I have to type in my password. So this is just the summation of the Euler series in the most basic way I could think of. And what you see here, first of all, this is the error that's plotted. So I just subtracted off the expected result. And you can see that suddenly over here at the end when I've summed, I guess this is about 10,000 terms, then things get wobbly. And this here is a typical signal that you have round-off errors that are creeping into your calculation. And I was, so I'm not sure if you managed to make a plot like that Monday, but if I then just change things around, so I do what we talked about in the lectures, I sum it starting with the smallest terms, then you can see that all this round-off error contamination that just disappeared. This is done with the same precision. So that was just the one line change, and you can sort of roughly see the convergence of the series. It actually goes down with the power law. But the other thing I wanted to show you here is then the this one, which is the series of Ramanujan, and I think I'm roughly summing the same amount of terms, and you can see that this is actually the convergence in that series is, of course, a lot worse, and it's also oscillating. So this is done, I think, in double precision, not a particularly brilliant implementation of it. But the what I wanted to show you is then the results of running the Shanks transformation on this. So first of all, we see that the series converges here, and then when I go ahead now, and then okay. So actually, let me change the last one to something that you might be able to actually see. This is again the error, but so the black line here, that's the results that I just showed you before for the straightforward summation of the series. And then this is the first Shanks transformation of that series. Then the green one here is the second. And you can see already at the second I start to get in trouble down here. Then I do it a third time, and it goes down. And the trouble will start even quicker. And then after the fourth Shanks transformation, then basically I get results that are no longer reliable. And that's, of course, because the idea of the Shanks transformation is that I try to accelerate the convergence. And in order to do that, I need higher and higher precision on my initial results. So there isn't any information. Once your results starts to do this, it's things have gone wrong. So you can't say much about it. And this was already done in double precision. And you can't do this on your computer, but I have a Macintosh, so I can do better than you can. But actually, the secret is that I have a I have a compiler that I paid for, and that can actually do quadruple precision. And when we do that, then everything actually does work out very well. So that's the same transformations, the initial data, then one acceleration, and then the third and the fourth. And now everything there, all the round-off problems, they have disappeared. On the x-axis, so that dropped out of what I'm showing here. This is actually just the first 100 terms, and I guess for the tutorial you were supposed to sum up to the first 50 terms, but this point here is 10 to the minus 16. So that might be, I find this amazing that I can get the actual limiting value for the sum of the series just by analyzing the first 100 terms. And I can get that result to a precision of 10 to the minus 16. You don't particularly need to sum it up to 10 billion terms, right? So, and of course, in actual calculations, maybe if you work hard, you would have 20 terms in the series. So don't forget that these acceleration techniques exist, and they're actually quite useful. That's Ramanujan, yeah. I guess it doesn't say so, yes. So that's the, you can see that the first initial results that I haven't transformed, they converge very slowly. But this is the, you know, you should be impressed by the how fast the error goes down. Yeah.
Sequences that converge like monotonically. Because if you have convergence that would go like monotonically and then be like this for a while and then go again.
Well, if you have any kind of information about how the series converges, then you can build up some kind of transformation that will look like a Shank's transformation, but won't particularly, you know, it won't be exactly the same transformation. So all I'm trying to tell you here is that if any knowledge about the convergence, you can exploit it. You would then have to come up with your own way of doing this, and often people do this. As I was mentioning, if I have data from finite size systems, maybe I can know something about the finite size corrections, and I can get expressions that would accelerate my data the same way. Obviously, if the individual points are coming out of a 15-hour calculation, then you don't want to do that all the way up to 2,000 points. So then you might be limited to very few data points. Okay, I just wanted to also mention that I got this survey on the course, and I just wanted to thank you all for making comments and suggestions. You probably realize that we're on a very tight schedule here, so I'll try to do my best to take your suggestions into account, but likely they will be for the benefit of the students next year if we actually have a course like this next year, which, well, you know, that's what's exciting about this program, that you have possibilities for bringing in people from elsewhere and do exciting things. So thanks a lot for that. And I wanted to say one thing. So one of you wrote that, could I please write clearer? My third grade teacher, that's what she wrote in my marks. And I know that students always tell me this, could you please write so that it's legible? And I'll try my best, but it's one of the things that is very, very hard to change. I know it's a problem. If you can't read what I'm writing, then speak up, and I'll try to improve on it. Yesterday we talked a little bit about integration, and so I'm just going to whip through a few other things here. But before we do that, I just wanted to say something here. What we did yesterday, and hopefully you succeeded in doing the tutorial where you're supposed to do this Rumberg integration. But if we start playing with these rules here, and I say that I have some quantity that I want to calculate, and I have a way of approximating it, which was our phi of h here. And then I had some error terms here, and they were basically, didn't we used to have lights on the blackboard? No. That's so nice, sunshine out. So when we looked at it for Rumberg integration, this was h squared, and then the next one here, that would be h4. But you can actually generalize this quite a bit. So I could assume that I would have some weird expression like this, where these powers would be something, not 2, 4. It's fine with me. Right? And then you could do the same thing here. I could then cut h in 2, and then I would get something like this. And then h over 2 here, beta plus something like this, and so forth. And then you can see that I would get the same expression if I try to calculate this out. Before, I would have a factor of 4 that I would have to multiply with. Now I have to multiply with a factor of 2 to the power alpha, and so forth. Here, in order to calculate this one, it would be 2 to the power beta. So I could still concoct some transformation like we did for the Rumberg integration. It would look messier. And in particular, you would of course have to know these powers. Well, if we do it completely generally, then you would have to assume that you would know these, and then I can systematically cancel them out, and then dream up some other transformation. You can write out what this Richardson extrapolation would be for this one. Of course, then the series or the sequence that you want to use it on will look entirely different, so you have to be inventive when you get to that point. Okay, so a few comments now. The let's look at the trapezoidal rule that we did yesterday. And I'm going to splurge and get a new piece of chalk. Okay. So we said that the function here from A to B, we assumed that it was a straight line, right? And so this here would be our f of A, and this here would be our f of B. Well, actually, this would be A and B, f of B, f of A. Okay. And so what we actually did here, we said that the integral from 0 to h of some ax plus b here, that of course becomes equal to bh here, and then plus 1 half a h squared, right? And if I go over and look at this approximation to the function, then you could see that b here, it would have to be equal to f of a here. So let's assume that we're integrating from 0 to h. And then b here would be f of 0. So I don't use a and b for two different things, right? And then a here, that would be f of h here minus f of 0 over h, right? So if I now look at this expression here, then I would actually have f of 0 times h, and then plus a half here, and then I would have to stick in f of h here minus f of 0 over h, and then multiplied by h squared. And lo and behold, if I simplify this formula slightly, then I get an h over 2 here, and then f of 0 plus f of h. Right, so in a rather cumbersome way, if you like, I rederived the result that we just immediately wrote down yesterday. So, but once you get this idea, then as one of you suggested yesterday, if I look at the approximation that I have at the function for the little interval h here, if here I assume that the function is just a straight line, then you can probably guess that the next thing that one will do, which carries the name of Simpson's rule here, is that we're going to approximate the function by a second order polynomial, right? So I do some alpha x squared here plus beta x plus gamma, and something like this, right? So locally, and you can of course see that if I make h here go small enough and my function is not very strange, then I could hope that approximating it locally by just a linear equation there, then that would be useful. But here we can hope that maybe we can do slightly better than this. So you can see that if I want to do the same thing that I do here, then I would actually now need to sample the function in 3 points because there are three unknowns here, alpha, beta, and gamma. Okay. So the way you would do this is that we need to sample in x equal to minus h, 0, and h. And then I can concoct a little formula for this. So I do what we do here. Actually, maybe we should, well, if I do this, then gamma here, that's going to be F in 0, right? And then I can look at F of minus H and F of H here, and what would that be? Well, that would be alpha H squared and then minus beta H plus gamma, and this would be alpha H squared plus beta H plus gamma. Okay, so I can add these up. So if I look at it, then alpha H squared here, it should be F of H plus F of minus H here, and then divided by 2, and then I need to subtract off minus F. Actually, let's put it up here, minus 2 F of 0. And if I just divide over by H squared, then it's not really a big surprise. We could have guessed that already, that I get the simplest finite difference expression for the second derivative, right? It has to come out like this, and we can already guess that probably from beta I'm going to get my sort of three-point function for the derivative here. So beta, it's just going to be f of h here, and then minus f of minus h, and then over 2h. Okay. So then I do what I do here. I'm just going to now integrate the function, because what I'm after is this formula here that we derived for the trapezoidal yesterday. So I'm going to look at the integral from minus h to h of alpha x squared plus beta x plus gamma dx. And if I do that, then I just get a 2 alpha here over 3 with a h cubed here, and then plus 2 gamma h, right? And then I can just substitute in alpha and gamma, probably. So if I do this, then I get 2/3, and then I should put in the alpha here, which was f of h plus f of minus h minus 2 f of 0 over 2 h squared, and multiplied by h cubed here, and then plus 2 f of 0 h. I think I did that right. Okay. So you can see that this again becomes linear in H. So actually, I just get H over 3, and then f of minus h, and then plus turns out you get plus 4 f of 0 here, and then plus f of h. Okay, so I get a formula, and if we then combine them, so I look at what happens if I start putting intervals together, then I would start with two intervals here, and then I would do two intervals next to it, and then continue. So maybe this here was our A and this was our B, right? And then from this pair of interval here, I would get H over 3 times F of A here, and then I get plus let's put the H outside here. So I get a third F of A, and then plus 4 thirds F of A plus H here, and then I get a plus a third F of A plus 2H. Okay, so that was the first interval, and then the next one after that, this one here, that's going to give us a plus H here, and then I get a third F of A plus 2H, and then plus 4 thirds F of A plus 3H, and then plus a third F of B. Right? I did that correctly. If I now combine this, then you can see that the a general integral here, it's going to have the form of H, and again some sum over some weights here of xi. But the weights that we're going to be using, they will be slightly different compared to the trapezoidal. So I get a third, then I get 4/3, and then I don't get a third again. Instead, I get 2/3, right? Because I get a third here and a third there. So I get 2/3, and then 4/3, and then 2/3, and then 4/3, and then we continue. And then the last points here are 4/3, and then 1/3 here. Right, so that would be the set of weights that we would be putting in for this Simpson's rule. So now you get very carried away, and you can probably see here that once you've done it with a second order polynomial, we could probably do it also with a third order and fourth order. And then in the end, you could actually get the idea that if I have if I have n points, why don't I approximate that by an nth order polynomial and just get the whole thing over and done with? And we'll sort of look at that in a few seconds, because you can get quite clever about this. In typical applications, you would not go much beyond Simpson's rule here. So there's just one thing here that I, you know about sum rules, right? You heard about, can anybody think of a sum rule for these weights here? Should they satisfy a sum rule? Say that again.
I'm saying that we have the events that we have a factor of 4 times some of the events.
Do numerology on that. But what whenever you develop your own clever way of doing an integration routine, you check it out on some test functions. So what is the simplest function we can imagine integrating? Yes. So why don't we just integrate one that can clearly be approximated with a second order polynomial, and we would claim that whatever we're doing should be exact. So if I integrate one here, then I would claim that I should be getting well, just b minus a, and then we have to be, we have to think a little bit here, because here, let's say that I have I'm sampling the function in 5 points, right? Okay. No. then h here, what is h? Well, it's b minus a here over n minus 1, right? So there's the famous n minus 1. So if I want this here, so what I'm saying here is that b minus a here, it should be equal to h, which is b minus a over n minus 1, and then the sum over omega I here. Right? So in other words, I'm claiming that if I write the weights as I did here, then the sum of the weights, they would have to add up to n minus 1. Right? Now it could be, yeah, so if my numbering here is so that I'm sampling in 5 points. So let's actually check, does this work? So I would claim that a third here, and then plus 4/3, plus 2/3, plus 4/3, plus 1/3 here, that should add up to 4. Does that, and it does. Right. So, right, so the, it's sort of a, yeah, so if I have endpoints in this series, they, any rule that you would come up with would have to satisfy this condition. Okay, so we're not gonna continue this game here, except for I just want to mention something about this Simpson rule here that you can go and look at, and that's the fact that the error term when we that we might be interested in, of course, it's quite a bit better. So it starts with some minus h5 now over 90, and then the fourth order derivative at some interior point here. So you can. Possible to show this. So the precision you went or you get compared to what you would get with the straightforward trapezoidal is obviously it's quite a bit better. But if that's your first error term, you can see that if I want to do some kind of Richardson extrapolation on this, I'm going to have to be significantly more clever than I was with the trapezoidal rule. So somebody asked this yesterday, if doing the Romberg integration corresponded to go between a linear and then a second order polynomial locally, and the error terms here, the structure for Simpson's rule are different, so it's not going to be it's not going to be equivalent. But we now want to be more clever than this. The reason why, the end goal is that you could ask yourself your question, suppose I want to sample the function maybe only in 10 points. What is the best way of choosing the 10 points so I get the maximum precision? What is, well, you know, maybe, what is the best that you can do with the least amount of points? So if you want a routine that is incredibly fast and sort of tailored to the kind of integrations that you want to do, then you would actually go to methods that are based on Gaussian quadrature, and I would just like to tell you how this works, because it's a sort of a cute way of doing this. What we're going to assume now is that I can choose, which may not be convenient, but I can choose the xi, and they may not be evenly spaced. Maybe that's not convenient for you, because we all sort of inherently think that all we're doing is just equal steps along the x-axis, and then we get to where we want to get. So what we're after is a systematic way of approximating the function with an nth order polynomial. And once we have that nth order polynomial, then I can easily integrate that. Okay, so that's the that's what we want to do. So I need to say a little bit about how we want to do polynomial interpolation. In other words, how I can find a polynomial that would be going through the points that I'm looking at. So we already did that, actually, for when we talked about the trapezoidal here and Simpson's rule, because I had, for the trapezoidal, 2 points. I constructed a first-order polynomial that went through the 2 points exactly, and this is precisely what we did for Simpson's rule. But now we just want to do the completely general case here. So if I have some x0 and x1 and some corresponding functional values, let's call them y1 and y0. So this would be f of x0 here and f of x1. Suppose I just have these 2 points here, then I can rewrite what we just did for the trapezoidal rule by saying that I take a first-order polynomial, my straight line here, and it's just what we previously called f0, so let's call it y0 here. And then I need the slope, right, which is y1 minus y0 here over x1 minus x0, and then x minus x0, right? Okay. So the important thing here is, of course, that this is exact for x1 and x0. Then I actually do get these points. But now we sort of, in one jump, want to do this for an nth order polynomial. And it turns out that the general case here, you can do it simply using what's called Lagrange interpolation. So there's a number of these famous French mathematicians that have done wonderful contributions to mathematics. we're having Remembrance Day tomorrow, so maybe I should interject that quite a few of them worked for what we today would call the military, because that's what people were using mathematics for. But so we define what are called cardinal functions, and let's see if I can do this right. So I define a function here that I'm going to call a cardinal function, and it's I'm going to use n of them. So I'm going to define Li of x here, and it's going to be a product here from j equal to 0 and then up to n. And my j here, it's going to be different from I, and I need that because I'm going to do in the denominator xi minus xj, and then upstairs I'm going to write x minus xj. Okay, so this here is a polynomial, right, in x, and you know, it's of order n. Okay, so when I look at it now, then I want to take Li and then evaluate it in xj. Okay, what do I get? Well, if I put in xj here, I'm going to get a 0, except for the case when j is equal to I, because in that case, then xj doesn't occur up here, because things would go wrong. But if j is equal to I, then the numerator and the denominator are the same for all the factors in this product. So I have to get a 1 here, j equal to I. And that's, of course, why we call this a cardinal function, and this is why we want to use this. So I can now define a function that would be an nth order polynomial, and it'll go through my n points trivially, and then satisfy what we want. So if I look here at a polynomial of I equal to 0 and then up to n here of Li of x, and then f of xi, then this will have the property that Pn of xi is equal to f of xi, right? So in other words, I have my function where that I have sampled here, there, there, and there, right? So this would be x0, x1, x2, and x4, and this polynomial here, it'll go exactly through these points per construction. So I have an nth order polynomial that represents the function exactly in my sampling points. Okay? So you can see that this is something that's very convenient if you want to stick it on the computer. If you by hand want to crank this out, the problem that you're facing is, of course, that the cardinal functions, they tend to be somewhat long once you take this to a higher order. So let's now try to integrate with this and see if we can do something interesting. So I just want to integrate this and so let's do what is often called quadrature, which for our purposes we can just think of another word as for integration, right? So I wanna take the integral here from a to b and f of x dx and approximate it by the integral from a to b here of pn of x dx. And that is just the integral from a to b, and then a sum from I equal 0 to n of li of x, f of xi dx. And that is a sum from I equal to 0 to n of f of xi. And then let's call the coefficients ai. And these coefficients ai here, they would just be the integral from a to b here of li of x dx. Okay. So instead of one fell swoop, by generalized what we did with the trapezoidal and the Simpson rule considerably, because I went over to this polynomial representation, and here I'm not requiring that the points xi that I'm sampling in are evenly spaced. So let's do a little example here, and then I'll tell you where, see if we can figure this out here. So let's look at the interval from minus 2 to 2, and then I want to look at what we now are going to call nodes, right? So the xi's here are called nodes. So I'm going to be sampling my function here in minus 1, 0, and 1. Okay. And then I just need to write out these cardinal functions here. If I start a rap group, I'm going to call myself cardinal function. That'll be in another life, right? L0 here of x, right? What do I have to do here? Well, I need to do a product from j equal to 1 and 2 here. So this I'm going to call x0, x1, and x2, right? So j equal 1 to 2 here, and then x minus xj over x, and 0 here minus xj. And if I write this out here, then I get x over minus 1. And then x minus 1 over minus 1 minus 1, right? And if I crank this out here, then this is a half x minus 1. The next one here, L1 of x, I can just plug in over in this formula here, and it turns out that this becomes minus x plus 1 x minus 1. And then L2 of x here, that is a half x plus 1. So if I now integrate them, we can all do this. It's just they're just second order polynomials. Then I get that a0 is equal to a2 is equal to 8 over 3. And a1 is equal to minus 4/3. So actually, the end result here is that at the end of the day, the integral from minus 2 to 2 of f of x dx, now the weights are going to be looking odd. Well, maybe not that all that odd. So it's f 8 over 3 f of minus 1 minus f 4 over 3 f of 0 here, and then plus 8 over 3 f of 1. So I have a 3-point integration formula that I claim that this should be pretty good. So this is exact if n is less than or equal to 2. Right? So if I have a 3 points, I can make a second order polynomial go through them. Okay, so what I mean by this, sorry, I said this the wrong way around. So this is exact for polynomials with n less than or equal to 2. Right? So if my actual function happened to be a polynomial, which unfortunately is not the most common cases in physics, then this would be an exact formula. So you can now modify these formulas. Suppose you happen to be able to sample your function in certain points, but not maybe not everywhere. Then you can cook up a formula here at your leisure. So what we want to do now is that we want to do this a clever way. And so that's sort of a well-known formula here. And the claim is, if I can choose these nodes here in a clever way, I can actually make this formula exact for functions that would be polynomials not of order n, but up to order 2n plus 1. Right? So I could take 3 points and integrate a five-order or fifth-order polynomial exactly, which sounds like how can that ever be possible? But indeed, that is actually possible, and that's called Gaussian quadrature. And the idea is, by choosing the xi cleverly, I can get this to be exact for f of x a polynomial of order less than or equal to 2n plus 1, right? Where I'm still with sampling in, n plus 1 nodes here. So let me just write out how this would work here. So there's sort of a theorem. And so I take a polynomial Q here that I somehow have to determine, and we'll see how this works shortly. So I'm assuming that this here is a non-trivial polynomial of degree n plus 1. Okay. And I have to choose it such that the integral from a to b here of q of x and then x to the power q here dx is equal to 0. This has to be true for all x's or for all k's here between 0 and n, right? In other words, if we think about orthogonal functions, I'm looking for a polynomial that on my given interval here is going to be orthogonal to all polynomials of degree n or smaller than that. So you can see that in a little while we're clearly going to see that I'm just going to pop out something that will look like special functions or orthogonal polynomials that you probably heard a lot about before. And then I look at x0, x1 up to xn here, and those are the zeros of q, right? And then integral for a to b of f of x dx approximated as a sum here over I equal to 0 to n of ai f of xi here is exact here for f a polynomial of degree less than or equal to 2n plus 1. Right. This seems like magic. So let me see if I can I can actually prove this. Okay, so we're going to assume that the function that I'm trying to integrate here is indeed a polynomial of degree 2n plus 1. So f here is a polynomial of degree 2n plus 1. Okay. So what am I going to do with this? I'm going to divide f by q. In other words, I'm going to write f here as sum p times q plus r, where they're all polynomials, right? And if this here is degree 2n plus 1, and this here, degree 2n plus 1, it follows that p of x here and r of x here, they have to have a degree less than or equal to n. Okay? Then by construction here, I know that when I'm integrating from a to b here of p of x and then q of x dx, I simply get 0 because I had concocted q of x so it was a polynomial that was orthogonal to all polynomials of degree equal to n or smaller than that.
F is 2n plus 1.
Yes, so f here is f
The function I'm trying to integrate is a polynomial to it. And then, so this here could be a border n, and that one could be a border n. Okay, so that actually, now, the other observation, so this is our first observation, then the other observation that we make here is that f of xi here, it's p of xi, q of xi here, plus r of xi, but the xi's here are the roots of q of xi, so this here is 0, and that's just r of xi. Okay. So in other words, if I combine this, and I'm looking at the integral from a to b f of x dx here, then it's going to be exactly equal to the integral from a of b of p of x of q of x dx plus the integral from a to b of r of x dx. And this here is 0. And this here, I can do exactly, because this is now a polynomial of order n, right? So I'm not doing any approximation by writing it as a sum here over ai, and then r evaluated in xi. And I'm doing this from I equals 0 up to n. But then I'm just going to use my property B here. So this is the sum from 0 to n of A of I, F of xi. In other words, I just showed you mathematically that function that we have now, that we have here. That is exact for a polynomial of order degree 2n plus 1, even though I'm sampling in just n plus 1 points. And the trick is, of course, that we need to determine I need to determine a polynomial for q, and I need to determine the roots. So this is geared towards doing calculations where my interval never changes, and in that case, I can determine q and its roots once, and then I can develop a formula that would then be working for tons and tons of integral on that interval, right? Hence, if you happen to know that you're going to be confronted with doing a couple of hundred million integrals on a specified intervals, it might actually be worthwhile going through this route here and see if you can figure out what happens here. So very importantly, the points that I'm sampling in are now the roots of some polynomial, and who knows where that could be. We're no longer assuming that they're equally spaced. What we're actually doing is tuning the sampling points, or the nodes, as I call them, so that we get the most precision that we can here. So I'm going to do an example here.
Yep. So is this technique better than the one we just erased? Even, like, sure, it works for polynomials, but for any given function? Like, are there sort of spaces or regions of function space where it's better and some where it's not so great? Or is it always better? I guess everything kind of looks like a polynomial, so it should always
do pretty well. Well, yeah, so the It depends on if you have the time to actually numerically determine the Q of X and the loops that you would be needing. If you can allow yourself that extra time, then in general you would be doing better. But let me ask that question in 5 minutes, because what we're going to see here is that, so let me give you my little example here. And so I take an interval from -1 to 1. Does anybody know of some functions that you heard of that are orthogonal of the interval from -1 to 1? What? Yes. You can ask a question.
Yeah, I was going to ask something earlier. For this work, we need all the zeros of Q to lie in the interval AB.
Yes.
So, can we always find such function?
Well,
this also satisfies the orthogonal.
That's the magic of orthogonal polynomials. If you can see here that I take this interval, and then you go and pull out your mathematical whatever book. It turns out that all the zeros of the Chandra polynomials are actually in the interval from -1. So I want to do something here that is with three nodes, right? So now we can guess ahead here. So I need to determine. Q of X here, and it has to have some C0 plus C1X here plus C2X squared plus C3X3. And so here, what I call N, that's equal to 2. And so I'm looking now for a third order polynomial. And what we're saying here is that the integral from -1 to 1 of Q of X here, Qx, has to be equal to the integral from -1 to 1 of Q of X X dx, and that has to be equal to the integral from -1 to 1 of Q of X X squared dx. And they have to all be equal to 0. I'm just saying here that Q of X has to be orthogonal to all polynomials of degree 2 and smaller. What is that polynomial called? So you already told me, right? So that polynomial here is P3 of X. And so... Well, we can just do some algebra here and solve these analytically if you like. So you can, for instance, see here if I require this one, then I'm going to see here that C0 and C 2, they're going to have to come out to be 0. So actually, the third order polynomial or Le Chandra polynomial, does anybody remember what they look like? They have a special property that they're even and odd, right? So the Le Chandra polynomials, and they have to be even and odd because the interval here is even around 0, so they're going to have even and odd symmetry. So the third order one here, it has some x3 here, and then it's actually -3x, and then there's a factor of 5 there. And well, if you want to look at the
mathematical definition, then you may want to require that the integral of p3 of x has some certain properties, so you may want to throw in a factor of a half there, but it really doesn't matter. But that would be the polynomial, and I'm claiming that this would satisfy whatever we need. So p3 of x here, it has roots which are in minus the square root of 3 over 5, and then in 0, and then in square root of 3 over 5. Okay, so then we're not done yet. I have just determined now q of x, and I have gotten to this point here where I have x0, x1, and x2, right? The three roots of the polynomial. So I need to determine the AI. If I wanted to do this without thinking, just doing what I had on the blackboard here, I would have to write out the cardinal function and then integrate them. But that sort of becomes a little bit cumbersome. So I can do a shortcut here. I can look at the integral from a or from minus 1 to 1 of maybe 1 dx here, right? So that would give me, it would give me a0 here, and then I would have to evaluate the function in the point minus the square root of 3 over 5, but that's just 1, right? So I know that this here has to hold true, and if I integrate that integral up, I just get 2 here, right? The next one is, of course, I'd integrate x dx here from minus 1 to 1. So I get minus square root of 3 over 5 a0. Then I don't get anything from a1 because the function is just 0 there. And then plus root 3 over 5 a1. And that would have to be the integral from minus 1 to 1 of x. And that is 0. And then the last one we integrate is minus 1 to 1 of x squared dx here. So that would give us 3 over 5 a0, and then plus 3 over 5 a2, and that would have to come out to be 2/3. Right? So I always, this is the fastest way, right? I'm going to have three coefficients and then three unknowns. And I can just solve this, and I don't have to explicitly write out these cardinal functions, which are just cumbersome to write out. So a0 is equal to a2 here, and if you solve these equations, you just get 5 over 9, and then a1 is equal to 8 over 9. So actually, we just had one expression for this. So the final integration formula that you have here is I'm going to say that the integral from minus 1 to 1 of f of x dx, it's going to be equal to 5 over 9. Then I evaluate the function in minus the square root of 3 over 5. Then plus 8 over 9, the function in 0. And then plus 5 over 9, the function in the square root of 3 over 5. Okay. 3 points, and I claim that this is good up to polynomials of order 5. It would have to be exact. exact here for f a polynomial of degree less than or equal to 5, which is amazing. So this can be taken quite far, and you can actually go and pull out, if we ever had an overhead projector, I keep asking for that, but that's apparently so ancient technology that they don't have that here. They've worked this out because if I'm just looking at the interval from minus 1 to 1, then I can actually go and pull out a table of a handbook, and they will have written out these formulas up to, I don't know, a few hundred points here. But once you get going with this, then you realize that, oh, well, there are many of these orthogonal polynomials, and you can actually, okay, yeah, so here choose for 96 points, right? How about that, right? I can generalize this to a number of other cases, and in particular, if you might remember that there are orthogonal polynomials that satisfies an orthogonality relation where you have an additional weight function. So if you're confronted with some of these, then there are actually these Gaussian quadrature formulas also for functions that would have a logarithmic divergence and so forth. So one can take this quite far. And you can sort of guess them according to your integral and what your weight factor, what kinds of polynomials and special functions that you're going to happen upon, and then you're just going to have to find the zeros of these, but in many cases they would be tabulated. These things are kind of cute, and you can... So I would claim that if you're looking... If all you can afford is about, I don't know, 20 points, and you know the interval would not change, then doing one of these Gaussian quadrature formulas that you would maybe have to tailor to the type of functions that you're looking at, that would probably give you the most precision with the least amount of work. You see where... Any questions about this? I can't remember really what we... are we doing this for a tutorial, Dennis? We're not. That's really a pity. okay. Well, you know, these... you can work these out. Okay, so I'm not going to say anything more about integration. The reason why we spent a bit of time looking at differentiation and integration is because it's... quite a bit of the same story. We're going to be using a lot of that because we want to integrate differential equations, and I'll tell you about that tomorrow. And I'm going to start tomorrow by telling you how you do the homework. So if you want to have a look at the homework and maybe read it and see if you can get an idea of what you're supposed to be doing, it's the solution of the
A subscript 2.
Okay.
I may be far from the rock here, but I think that's
maximum have some sort of problem to prevent something like this question for it.
No, it can't be right. It is only once for certain intervals.
Yeah, so you can.
I can't.
You would have to.
I can't.
There are a number of tricks that you can play. So you could try to transform your integration as an integration over another interval of.
Rescale the variable.
Yeah, you have to use a change variable. So there are a number of tricks that you can play. But in general, it would be.
It's a program that has like this feature implemented. I think it just takes a chain of variables to take any interval for 20 to go from -1.
I think that's maximum.